is an 8-iron, and it's a dead shank.
Wow.
Way right.
Oh, takes a hop off the path.
You got to be kidding me.
Very tough pitch shot right here. You got to hit it into the hill. One hop up and bite, and it's in.
Kind of like that.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? This is Jay from Sub 70. It's March 9th. The Valspar Invitational is about halfway through the second round. And this seems to be perfect timing to get this podcast up. PGA Tour Live, keeping with the PGA Tour's tradition of cutting out coverage at the most crucial moments, has decided to crash. And it was probably about 30 seconds, maybe less, after Tiger Woods made a birdie putt to tie Jimmy Walker for the lead. So, thank you to PGA Tour Live. I've been a big supporter, but absolutely massive failure here today. Valspar's looking good, though. Tight leaderboard. A bunch of old guys up there. Bob Estes, Furyk, and then Stricker played well yesterday. And then, of course, Tiger is tied for the lead with Jimmy Walker. It's kind of interesting. You know, the guy wasn't even taking full swings, you know, 4 or 5 months ago, and he is absolutely trouncing Spieth and Stenson, who he's playing with. This episode of the podcast, though, also comes at a fitting time. It is our interview with Edward Lohr. He is in second place in the web.com tournament right now. He's having an awesome season on the web tour. Edward went to Oklahoma State University, was an awesome collegiate golfer, played with Charles Howell III and some other great players. They won an NCAA team championship, played tons of mini tour events, including the Hooters Tour, the Nationwide Tour. He's been on the Web Tour, spent several years over in Asia, and has played in Europe as well. I believe 29 countries in total. So it's a really interesting story and some insight on how difficult it is to play professional golf for a living and some of the sacrifices you have to make and the support system you need to be able to do that. It was a really great talk. We appreciate the time. Be sure to check out Edward's Twitter account, which is Big E in Big D. And also shout out to the Ed Lohr Tracker and the Loonies. Check out that Twitter account as well. It's a great Ed Lohr tracking account, which is Ed Lohr Tracker. Here's the interview.
Well, I'd like to welcome to the podcast Edward Lohr, four-time All-American at Oklahoma State, winner on the Asian PGA Tour and the Web.com Tour. Ed, thanks for joining us. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me this morning.
Well, first off, great playing so far on the Web.com Tour in 2018. You're seventh on the money list this year. What's been the key to your success this year out there, and why are you playing so well, in your opinion?
Man, that's a good question. Thanks. It's been obviously a really good start to my year. I don't really know if I can point to one thing. You know, I did go to a couple of places that I've played before and played well. You know, I did win in Panama a few years ago, and then, you know, had a second this year, which obviously been the bulk of my money. So I think just kind of being comfortable where I've been, and, you know, kind of knowing what it takes, you know, in each of those places to succeed, probably helped me out quite a bit.
And I don't know if a lot of our listeners know this, and I think this is what makes this story so great, and, you know, why I wanted to especially have you on is the perseverance this took. But, you know, the 2016-2017 season, you know, weren't your best. And now doing what you're doing, like I said, it makes the story even better. So in 16 and 17, what tours were you playing, and you know, how was your game during those periods when you weren't on the major tours? Were you still trending the right way to kind of get to where you're at today, or kind of describe your game those last 2 years and the process it took to sort of get to where you're at?
Well, I mean, obviously golf is such a, you know, a lifelong process. You really never figure it out. for sure. You know, I had some real good years from, 2012, 13 were my two best years. I actually had my tour card in 14, but I had a terrible year. And really after that, that was really kind of a turning point. I really kind of went a new direction with my game. Kind of tried to rebuild my swing a little bit, get rid of some, kind of lifelong errors that I'm not sure I ever really addressed. So really the last couple of years, I had been playing pretty well just on various mini tours and kind of wherever they would take. So I've been playing pretty well, but, a lot of this game is about opportunity, and I didn't have a lot of opportunity. I created a good opportunity at the end of last year at Q School, and so far I've taken advantage of it. So it's, like I said, my game's been good, but I just kind of now have a little bit better chance to move it forward from where I'm playing.
And let's talk about, the Q School for the web.com this year. You were in 68th place, halfway through the event, and then you go on one heck of a birdie run, to get your card. What was that pressure like and that experience like to kind of know, knowing it's kind of do or die and you got to kind of perform and to perform under that kind of pressure? It's, what was that experience like overall?
Well, obviously very gratifying. I mean, I've played enough Q schools. I think that was probably my, 15th Q school probably. So I know what to expect, and I knew the first 2 days, I knew I was playing a lot better than I was scoring. And obviously, in the desert where we were playing, the conditions were pretty ideal for scoring, but I just wasn't, I wasn't quite getting enough in the hole. And then, so the third day, I really was kind of on the same path. I wasn't doing a whole lot. And then I think I birdied four of my last five the third day, but really in my day. Well, so it was really, making, I think, 13 birdies in my last 23 holes. So I just finally, they finally started going in, but I think the key was I was patient enough. I didn't really ever get flustered with, not really getting the scores because I knew I was playing well, but I just hadn't quite, got them over the hump. And then, maybe finally a couple of them went in and off we went.
I saw that interview after you got your card and the emotions you had when you were, talking about your family and the support, that they've given you through all these years. Can you comment on what that meant to you and to have them behind you to kind of keep, letting your talents come out and keep grinding on this and getting out there on the major tours again and succeeding in doing it and having their support behind you?
Yeah, I mean, that means the world to me. I've been at this for a long time, 17 years, and, honestly, I thought I was going to be one of those guys, like everybody, that was going to come right out and get on tour and, make more money than I could ever spend. But it hasn't been the case at this point. Now, the great thing about golf is, I don't necessarily have to be done. I can continue to chase it. I've still been healthy. And I still have the optimism that I can do it, but, to have their support has just been, it's obviously I couldn't do it without it because it takes such an effort to do it because, you're always on. You need a strong personality, and, my wife Melanie's been awesome with my kids, and you got to have a lot of great support behind you, or else, it just makes it even harder, and it's already such a tough pursuit anyway.
When you're talking about changes in your golf swing, and I saw some stuff in the media and on Twitter on this, what exactly did you work on with your teacher to sort of, for lack of a better word, tighten up your golf swing and to get a little bit more consistent? What changes did you make?
Well, I'd always played with a kind of a cupped wrist, which kind of opened the club face, and it just kind of led to kind of a myriad of problems, but mainly it gave me too much variance at impact. I was always kind of trying to catch up with the club face, square it at the impact of the ball, which, at 110, 115 miles an hour is obviously very hard. So kind of gone in a little new direction and tried to stay stabilized my club face a lot more to where it's, you know, I'm not still relying on my hand-eye coordination, and it's going to be a lot more consistent, especially, you know, where I would see it, obviously, is when you get under the most pressure is when your flaw is going to come out. So I would play a lot of great golf, but then all of a sudden I'd play in these big tournaments and, you know, I'd hit one or two shots and like, man, where, I don't know where that came from, but, you know, that's a double or a triple, and all of a sudden your day's done.
And how long ago did you start making those changes, and how long did it take for you to see the results?
Really kind of, I went to European Tour School the end of last year, so when I got back from that and I kind of had done the same thing, I'd been playing really well and made it all the way to finals and then saw a lot of the same patterns. And so this was like November of like 2016. So, and it's really, you know, it's taken me, and it's still going to be a daily deal and probably until the day I quit playing golf. But, you know, it probably took me 6 or 8 months to really start to trust it. And now it's, you know, now I have a lot of belief in it, which, you know, I think it's definitely translated into my game.
When you were a kid and started playing golf, I read your dad was an excellent player. I'm assuming he kind of introduced you to the game. What age did you start playing, and how did you get involved when you first got out there?
You know, I started playing. My dad first started taking me out when I was 4 or 5. I have a younger brother who's 2 years younger. That's also a very accomplished player. So we just kind of started as a family game. You know, started playing some little father-son deals. And I still remember, you know, my dad, just to try to get us to learn how to compete when we were young, you know, he was obviously a really good player, but just so we could kind of compete with him, he would drop us off at the, we would start playing from the 150 marker, which, you know, I would encourage a lot of kids to do, you know, just so you're used to making threes and fours and fives, not just, you know, tens when you start playing. So I think it gave us an early start on how to learn how to compete, try to make a score, you know, and then started playing some junior tournaments and started to really develop an affinity for it. I'd say at probably age, you know, 13 or 14, I was like, man, I really like golf, and obviously just kind of kept going from there.
And is that the age when the talent started to show itself that, you know, there's a possibility you're going to be playing D1 golf and maybe actually doing this professionally? Is that when you sort of, you know, blossomed into the player that was going to get the D1 scholarship?
Yeah, I probably started getting some looks at, you know, 14 or 15, you know, some coaches would kind of start popping up. Yeah, I mean, I played every other sport. Like most kids my age, I wasn't really into the specialization. So, you know, but I only played golf. I quit playing every sport after 8th grade. So really kind of high school is when I started to really hone in on it. But yeah, you'd start to see the coaches pop up a little bit at all these tournaments. And so yeah, that's kind of when I knew and just kept going from there.
You went and played golf at Oklahoma State. Was that an easy choice for you to make at that point, or were there some other universities that you were considering going to at that point in time?
I had some other offers, but, you know, in my opinion, if you get a chance to go play golf at Oklahoma State, you know, that's a pretty awesome, that's a, you know, pretty awesome deal. I mean, it's a preeminent golf program in the country. So I pretty much knew after I had all my visits, with the coaches, and then certainly after my recruiting visits, that I was going to go to school there. And, you know, I was from kind of a small suburb out of Dallas, and Stillwater had a really similar feel size wise and just kind of a slow pace. And that's what I liked. And I loved every minute of it. And, you know, I couldn't speak more highly of, you know, the golf program or Coach Holder or, you know, anything with Oklahoma State. I loved to death.
How much fun was that experience? And then of all the accomplishments you had personally and the team had, what are you most proud of the time you spent at Oklahoma State for the accomplishments you had? Which means the most to you?
I think my first year was probably my best. I mean, I won NCAA Freshman of the Year, so, you know, that was pretty neat to obviously be recognized for that. You know, I think being All-American 4 times in a row is, you know, quite an accomplishment. I won at least one tournament every year I was there. So, you know, there's not that many guys at Oklahoma State that have done that, you know, and to it's a pretty upper echelon place. So, you know, got had some pretty cool stuff. And then I got named to the Walker Cup team when I was a senior in college. So, you know, as far as college and amateur golf, that's kind of the pinnacle to be on one of those. So I'd put that right up there.
And there were some other great players at Oklahoma State when you were down there. What other guys did their talent really show to you, or they were really, really great players in your eyes and impressed you the whole time you were down there?
No, we had a bunch. You know, the other two guys that still play are Bo Van Pelt, who actually has been hurt for the last couple of years, but, you know, it's had a great, really solid career for 15 years. And then Charles Howell. So, you know, I was a contemporary. He's a year younger, but I've known him since I was about 10. But, you know, guys, those both were both of my teammates. So, you know, that says a lot about it. It's two guys that played on tour for 15-plus years. And then we had some other guys that tried. A kid named Anders Holten was a Swedish kid. He was a first-team All-American. He tried for a little bit. But just a lot of good, solid golfers and a lot of great guys, too.
If I read this correctly, did you actually live with Charles Howell III when you were in college?
Yeah, we did. We roomed together for, two years.
And I'm assuming he was just a complete wild man the whole time you guys were down there together. I picture him going out five nights a week, just staying out before in the morning, cutting classes.
If you consider going to the golf course being a wild man, then yeah, he was right up there.
I picture him practicing a lot, getting really good grades, and not going out too late, in all honesty.
You pretty much nailed it.
Is there any great Charles Howell III stories you can share about him that, without throwing him under the bus, that are just classics from the time you guys were living together down there that would be funny to tell?
Well, contrary to his image, when he came to school, he was big in the rap, which a kid from South Georgia is kind of odd. So he had a couple of Tupac posters in his room, and he actually had this, he came to school in the late 90s, so like a mid to late 90s Toyota Corolla, and he had a neon light in the back of it. And so it was pretty much the most off-the-wall thing you would ever think for a kid like Charles to come to school with. So he got rid of that shortly after school with all the grief that he would take from the golf team.
Yeah, I picture him more like in a Buick or something like that, a little more conservative than neon exactly. Lights on a Toyota.
That's right.
Well, I don't think that hurt him too bad, but that is pretty. I had no idea he was into rap music and had neon lights on a car. That's awesome. Well, let's look at the 99 Walker Cup. You talked about a little bit earlier, and you got to play on that, which has got to be an incredible experience. So how was it going over to Scotland? And I looked at both the lineups on the American side and the British and Irish teams. Those teams were stacked with talent. That had to be some pretty darn good matches.
Yeah, it was. I had been over there. I had played the Palmer Cup, which is kind of the college version, a couple of years earlier in St. Andrews. So I'd played over there a little bit and had kind of fallen in love with links golf already. So it was pretty, you know, it was an awesome trip. We got to play. We played like Troon, Turnberry, Royal Dornick. So we played some pretty awesome places we landed, you know, 7 or 8 days early and played some courses on our way. And so, you know, obviously it was just a wonderful experience. They had a great team. I mean, Luke and Paul Casey and some other guys that have played on tour. So it was a hell of a match. You know, it was actually tied going to the Sunday singles, and they whooped us pretty good. I was the only guy that won. I think they beat us 7-1 in Sunday singles. So the margin was a lot farther apart than the matches actually were. So, but once again, I mean, just a great lifetime experience, really.
And then after college, you turned professional. And what tours did you start off playing when you went pro back at that time? Where did you sort of land at first?
I've pretty much played any tour you could ever come up with. I think my first year out, I turned pro in 2000, went to Q School. I didn't make it through, so I went to like played the Hooters tour, and then I went to Canadian Tour School. So this is 01, played there. Went back to Q School, didn't make it. Then I had a buddy mentioned going to the Asian Tour Q School, so I went with him in 2002. Got my card there, and then played really well over there. I finished, I actually lost in the playoff my first event, and then ended up finishing like 30th on the money list. So that gave me a place to play, and then I kept going back to Q School, but I couldn't ever make it out of the second stage. And so I ended up playing the Asian Tour for 5 years through 2006. I got my nationwide card in 06. So then 07, I played there and didn't play any good. And then, man, after that, it's just been a myriad of, mini tours, state opens, won the qualifiers until 2011, end of 2011 when I got my tour card for the first time in my 12th try at Q School.
Well, when you were playing the Asian Tour, you did have two victories in 03 and 04. I'm assuming that would be great for your confidence. It's still a major tour you're winning out there. That had to be, you know, reinforcing you're going in the right direction.
Oh, and there's no doubt. In 04, I won the Korean Open, and, you know, I played with Ernie Els the last 2 days, and he had just won the British Open. I think he was ranked 2 or 3 in the world, so... Yeah, that was a huge boost. You know, it was a wonderful tour, a wonderful life experience. You know, I got to see a bunch of countries. I played in 29, so most of them were over there. Yeah, it was awesome. I loved it. I've encouraged guys that I've known to do it. You know, it's a lot better than, I mean, trying to just play mini tours, but it was a cool experience for sure.
When you won the Korean Open, I saw you've commented on this in the past about, you know, it's you and Ernie Els kind of going down to 9 holes at the end. Is it more nerve-wracking knowing there's, you know, it's Ernie Els, or do you just embrace the moment and say, like, this is why I practice, this is why I play, this is fun? Can you kind of describe what it's like when it's sort of, you got basically a legend next to you, and it's for all the marbles? It's, you know, what's that experience like?
Yeah, you know, I never felt overwhelmed. Like, I'm like, you know, like, oh boy, I'm playing with Ernie Els. I mean, first off, he's just such a gentleman. So it's not like he was intimidating to play with. You know, but I think for a guy like me in that position, it was more of a, all right, well, let's see what I got. You know, how does my game stack up to him? And, you know, honestly, I didn't feel like that he did a whole lot that I couldn't do. So, you know, yeah, certainly it was a boost of confidence. You know, I rose to the occasion and, you know, kind of dusted him off pretty good. So, you know, I've played with him a couple of times since then, and he's always mentioned it. And like I said, he's just such a first-rate guy. But, yeah, for a guy like me, I mean, I was, you know, 26 at the time, maybe. 27. So, yeah, it was a huge boost that, yeah, I was doing the right things and hopefully going the right direction.
And was that the tournament that they actually, if I read the story, they paid you in cash?
Yeah, it is correct. I got paid, what was it, 64 grand in cash, or 74 grand in cash.
Yeah. And you literally have to just, I mean, here's the tournament's over, here's your cash, here's your trophy, and then take you to the nearest bank, I guess, or something like that. I mean,
yeah, we would. Yeah, we'd all just kind of hang around and drink a couple of beers after the round, and yeah, they'd bring in all the money and, you know, a money count machine, and you know, they would just call you over one by one, count out your money, and there you go. And so I actually was going to Taiwan after that. So that Monday morning, the next day, there was a couple banks nearby where we stayed, and I took it in there, and the guy luckily recognized me from the golf tournament. And, you know, I think he charged me $400 to wire it home. So, but I didn't sleep much that night. That Sunday night, obviously, was, you know, 75 grand in cash in my room. So it was a little bit of a odd situation.
Yeah, you hope no one's following you back on the bus, right?
No, because it would have been a great bus to knock off because, you know, there's probably $300,000 in cash on the bus because we all rode in the same bus. So.
Well, it all worked out okay. It's an interesting story. It to did. Be honest, I had no idea they actually, I just assumed they would wire it to your account, and I had no idea.
Most tournaments, most tournaments did. There was a couple of tournaments each year that were run in Korea. Those are the only ones that we ever got paid in cash in.
And then in 2006, you finished second in the Dunhill Links Championship. And my question is, just from watching it on TV as a golf fan, that looks like it's the coolest event ever. And then how much fun is it to compete in that event? And you were kind of going down to the wire with a couple of big names on that one as well.
Yeah, I would say that was probably the coolest thing, you know, I've experienced. You know, as a golfer, I think there's a couple of golfing meccas, in my opinion. You know, one of them is Pebble Beach, and I think the other one is, you know, the first tee at St. Andrews. So, you know, to play there in a big event, I don't think of anything like it. And, you know, the other two courses, Carnoustie, which, in my opinion, would be the best course I would play under decent weather any day. So, pretty awesome experience. I have my brother caddying for me. So, so just awesome. You know, I was playing with Ernie and VJ the last day as well, and Padraig ended up winning the tournament. But yeah, I mean, that was the closest I've come on a, you know, to having a really career-defining moment. You know, I think I got tied for the lead after the 10th hole and then made a couple of bogeys. And then I think Padraig made a couple of birdies coming in. So it ended up 4 or 5 shots. But it was, you know, for a while there, it was a pretty awesome deal.
And then you would have had your European Tour card, but there was a error on when you checked into the tournament that they wouldn't go back and fix to essentially not make you exempt on that tour after that finish?
Well, what they do in Europe is they have so many tournaments around, you know, obviously in different countries, is that if you're not a member of their tour, you have to pay what's called an affiliate fee, and it's about, it used to be, I don't know what it is now, but it used to be £3,000, which at the time was about $5,000. So I hadn't paid that, which, I mean, who's going to really pay $5,000 for, you know, 1 week? But had I paid it, I would have had it. I would have made enough money to get my card. But, you know, it's different than over here, because obviously over here, if I would have done that, I just wouldn't have made enough money and it wouldn't have mattered. But, you know, they do it for different reasons, mainly because they don't want 300 guys getting membership because they played tournaments in so many different places. So that was the reasoning.
The times you play the European Tour, it looks like it would be, to my perspective, an enjoyable tour to play. It looks like the guys get along well. Is that perception correct, that it is kind of a little bit more easygoing and good group of guys out there, and it's a fun tour to play on?
Yeah, there's no doubt. You know, I think just by habit and by all the places they travel, you just become, I think, such better friends, because a lot of places you're all staying together, all staying in the same hotel. So you're all, you know, the camaraderie is a lot more, I think, than the tour, the U.S. tour. And that's just by, I think, almost forcibly by all the places they go and how many times they have to ride on the bus together and, you know, et cetera. So yeah, it's a lot of fun. You just have to have a lot of pages in your passport and expect to spend a lot of time in the air. But it's great.
And then after that, you're on you play web.com full-time in 2007, and then fast forward to 12 and 13 with two wins on the web.com tour. Can you go through those victories, what they meant to you, and how that sort of set you up to go on the PGA Tour in 2014?
You know, the first time I won in 12, I actually had my PGA Tour card, but I was pretty far down in the priority ranking, so I wasn't getting into any tournaments. So I just went down and played in Panama, and obviously ended up winning. And so that year it was kind of weird because I had a tour card, but I really was almost trying to play as much on the web.com tour, or I guess that was the web.com tour, yeah. Just to, you know, to try to finish inside the top 25, because at some point in the year, I was like, man, unless I win a tournament on the big tour, I'm not going to finish in the top 125. So it was kind of an odd year. I think I ended up playing like 12 times on the Club.com tour, and probably like, 16 or 17 in the big tour. So I played a ton of golf. And then, 13 was my best year of golf. I finished fourth on the tour, on the Web.com tour. Pretty much had my tour card locked up in March. So that was by far and away the best year of golf I've played.
And then when you go into 14 for the PGA Tour season, kind of looking back, how did that great play in 13, how did it not transfer over to the PGA Tour in 14 with some perspective looking back a few years?
That's a good question. I think in 12, the first year I got my card, I kind of thought I was going to get my head kicked in just because I hadn't been out there and I didn't, while I was golf, it was a whole new, I was trying to learn new courses every week and I didn't know when I was going to get to play, and so 14 was different because I was coming off my best year and I really thought I was prepared. And I was prepared, but my game just didn't hold up at all. I got off to a poor start, so all of a sudden, I had a good number to start the year in my category, and then I missed some cuts, and I started falling down the list, so then I didn't start, then I didn't keep getting in, and then we start chasing, and I was really struggling with what I was doing with my golf swing. I was basically just trying to put a Band-Aid on it every week, and, good luck playing on that tour trying to do that. So I just kind of, I was kind of a lost soul, honestly. I didn't really know what I was trying to do, and obviously it showed in my performance. But I think after the year I'd had in 13, for that to happen, really just kind of crushed my confidence and took me a long time to get it back.
Well, hopefully you'll be on the PGA Tour in 2019 with your good play. So hopefully that's a learning experience that when you're back out in the big tour, you're better for it in the long run, right? I mean, I think
sure.
Hopefully you look at it from that direction. I have to ask you about, everyone knows there's the Tiger Tracker on Twitter, but to let everybody know who's listening, there's also the Ed Lohr Tracker on Twitter, which is great, by the way. If people are not following it, they should. It's fantastic. How did that start? And are you putting content on there as well? And then there's also, you have to comment on the Lohr loonies who follow you on this thing. So,
well, it started a few years ago, and a guy, he's a left-handed guy, and he just likes left-handed golfers. And he wanted to start this account, and I said, sure, go for it. So I really only met him a couple of times, but I've obviously had a ton of interaction with him via text message and social media. So it's just kind of taken on a life of its own, and I provide very little content. I would say maybe be 5%. He does it all on his own, or else he's very savvy. He'll find people that are at the tournament somehow, and I don't inquire because I get a kick out of it as well. So, I definitely think it's the best tracker. I mean, when something's more involved with what a guy's eating or, where he's going versus what he's shooting, that's way more entertaining than, a silly golf score. But, the Lohr loonies they're awesome. And they kind of pop up out of nowhere. So it's definitely a lot of entertainment. Hopefully provide a lot of humor in this silly game.
Yeah, definitely the stuff that you're eating and the food comments are hilarious. And I was thinking, like, who's following you around to take these pictures of you, like, having breakfast or whatnot? But it is. It's, like, really entertaining because it's, like, it's not so serious. It's serious. I mean, you're playing professional golf, but it's really entertaining to watch. Or you see the pictures in the comments. So if people are out there
amen to that.
Yeah, it's funny. It's really, really good. I love the vibe of it. So I'm a follower of it, and I enjoy it a lot. So it's awesome.
Good.
We got some more lighthearted questions. I kind of ask these to every touring pro that we have on the podcast. So it just, no right or wrong answer, just sort of what it comes to your mind on this stuff. So if you could take three PGA Tour players, or they could be Champions Tour players, out for a day on the golf course with a fun money game and some dinner and drinks afterwards, who are you taking, why are you taking them, and what course are you guys all playing?
Fred Couples, just because he was like one of my favorites growing up, and because I've played with him a couple of times, and he's just the guy that you envision. Phil Mickelson, being a lefty and just, you know, I mean, if you want to gamble with somebody, why wouldn't you want to gamble with him? And plus, he's just entertaining. I think it's all get out. And, you know, I don't know if he does know as much as he thinks he does, but he claims to know a lot. And then my third, let's see, who would my third be? Oh, gosh, I'm choking on my third. Probably, if I could turn back the clock, I would have loved to play the Jack in his heyday just to kind of see. It's kind of hard to do now, but that's probably, I'd probably do my three.
Well, that's a pretty good foursome right there. Best golf shot you ever hit under pressure?
Oh, my gosh, I got a ton, but I'd say my most memorable shot is, let's see, I hit a 3-wood the third day at the 2013 U.S. Open on the second hole at Marion from about 280 to about 10 feet and made the putt for eagle and got on the leaderboard early in the third round. That's probably the best, most quality. So now I've got some crazy shots that I've hit at different, you know, at different points, but probably like in a pressure situation, that'd probably be the most pure shot I've ever hit.
Best golf shot you ever saw a competitor hit while you were playing with them that you were just blown away on how good it was and under the circumstances?
Oh my gosh. Best golf shot I've ever seen hit.
And if you need some time, you can call timeout on that, and I can ask you another one if you need.
Yeah, ask me a different one.
We'll get back to that one.
Okay.
The question I had was, who had the most talent you ever saw up close that you played with? Just raw natural golf talent.
A kid I grew up playing with. Well, you might know his name. Well, the middle Keeney kid, Hank Keeney, could hit the ball. You know, there's guys that hit it long now, but this was back in the early 90s with, you know, persimmon clubs or maybe just the first metal clubs. He could hit the ball further than anybody ever seen, and he can do stuff with a golf ball that, you know, I've never seen.
Is he still playing any sort of professional?
No, he teaches here in Dallas somewhere.
Yeah, I got to see him play at the John Deere Classic, like I said, like in 02 or 03, and the length he hit with a fade from that generation,
yeah,
it was staggering. Ridiculous. How good it was. Like, the talent, yeah, it's crazy he never won on the PGA Tour for as much raw talent as he had. That's great. That's an interesting answer, and I saw the same thing when I watched him. I was, holy cow, can this guy play?
Yeah.
Best three golf courses in the world, and what makes them so great?
You know, the best three that I'd probably play, I would, like I said earlier, I'd play Carnoustie number one, just because I think day in and day out, just the demands that you have, the shots you have to hit, while, you know, I think it's very fair, it's obviously just really hard. I'd put Pebble Beach up there just because of its sheer beauty, you know, even though there's a bunch of holes that are kind of blah, the, you know, six or seven holes on the ocean, I think are the prettiest, you know, that you'll ever see. Then my third, I would probably put Butler National in Chicago because I just think it's the hardest, most straightforward golf course I've ever played.
I can attest to you on that one. That is we're outside the Chicago area. I played it, and it's a beast. You could hold like a major there tomorrow.
Oh, any day.
Yeah,
any day.
It's a great golf course. Back to the best golf shot you ever saw a competitor hit under pressure. Does it hit you yet?
It hasn't hit me yet. I've obviously played so many golf rounds and with so many different people, but I haven't. I'm still grinding on that one.
All right. Well, I got one last question. I put it out to the
loonies. How about if I answer this way? I can tell you like the three guys I've played with that have ever impressed me the most.
Sure. Yeah.
I would put Brooks Koepka number one. I played with him the first year that he actually didn't even have his card, but he ended up giving his card the year he, I think he finished second at the Fry, so that would have been like 13, in the 13. He blew me away. Thomas Bjorn, I played with him in Hong Kong a long time ago, and he was the best iron player I'd ever seen. And then the couple of times I played with Ernie, and it wasn't really his ball striking. It was more, I thought the guy had the best short game I'd ever seen. It's just the way he hit little chips and pitches, and obviously bunker shots were just phenomenal.
That's a pretty good list there. Yeah, everyone, I think, kind of agreed that when Koepka was coming up, that talent was going to probably win a major. Incredible player. Well, I put it out to the loonies that we're going to be doing the podcast, and is there any questions they wanted me to ask, you know, of their hero? And this was the best one. This is the best one I thought from it. One of the questions was, what was the better, for lack of a better word, mascot from the movie, either Bull Durham with the bull or the gopher from Caddyshack?
What was the better mascot?
Yeah, what was the better character? The bull from Bull Durham in the outfield or the gopher from Caddyshack? This is from one of the loonies.
I'd put the gopher, no doubt.
Okay. They were thinking you were going to go that way versus the bull, but I figured being a professional golfer, probably go in that direction. Well, I can't thank you enough for taking the time to do the podcast. Continued great success in 18. It's a great story of perseverance, like I said, to see kind of where you're, you know, getting through Q school and what you're doing out there now. We're going to keep following it, but it's fantastic, and thank you for your time today.
All right, Jason. I appreciate you having me on, man.
Thanks, Ed.
Thanks a lot. All right, you got it.